questions that could reveal your purpose in life? What if there were questions that could surface the change most meaningful to you? And what if answering those questions would give you the power to ignite? Welcome to the Illumify Game Changer podcast. These are big conversations that lead to self-discovery. Together, let's embark on the leader's journey and ignite meaningful change. Leaders challenge what is now the status quo, and that always provokes resistance from others who prefer, for whatever reason, things to stay just as they are. As a leader, it's not about protecting yourself from the resistance or even the barbs. It's about expressing your vision of change so it becomes meaningful to them. So meaningful that it quells their resistance and they willingly help you to ignite it. First, though, you have to be aware of where the resistance is coming from right now and why. And that's what Jonathan confronts in this episode as he answers the next Amplify question.
What is preventing this change right now? What is preventing this change right now? Is it a thought, a belief, a collective assumption? Is it fear of change, or is it a desire for things to stay undisturbed? Limited resources? What's the biggest barrier you see? What is preventing this change right now? Collective assumptions, yes. And not assumptions that are 10, 20, 30 years old, much older than that. And I can say this without talking about any particular country or community. An important part of my vision, perhaps even the starting point for my vision, is a desire to bring down a set of assumptions, which I think are profoundly wrong, and it's the pessimism. It's a view of humanity that is dark. That we can't be trusted. We can't be trusted, and that's why we have laws, because we can't be trusted. It's a view which says we compete to survive. It's a view that says politics is about defeating the opposition. We don't have to name him. Let's not go into the party politics, but it's just over 20 years ago, perhaps 25 years ago, where a senior American politician declared war on the other party.
You're with us or against us.
Yeah. So all of these things are not, they're not what we're describing here. They're not signs of the times. They are not signs of the times. They're something much deeper. We have built foundations here which are wrong. And my vision seeks to break some of those foundations because they don't correspond to our own humanity. We have built institutions which go against the grain of who we are. You said, Marianne, you used beautiful language, contribution. I believe deeply with every bone in my body from what I've seen. Yeah, I'm saying this not from a textbook, but from what I've seen in the world over the last 50 years, people want to make a contribution. People want to be part of something. They don't want to be measured. They want to be appreciated.
And the measuring, how is that happening now?
Well, we talked about finance. There is, and then the dehumanization of finance. And again, small correction here. There is a glorious, heroic vision of finances, which where they support new ideas, yeah, where finance is the lifeblood of a new idea, of invention. In Germany, let's take one example. There is a tradition in Germany that finance goes out into the world and looks for good ideas.
Sure.
Yeah.
And helps realize them.
Right.
Without that finance, innovation dies on the vine.
Right. And in that German model, I hope it's still true. I hope I'm not speaking about something which is sadly disappearing. I hope not. But certainly for a long time and until recently, that finance would not provide and then disappear and walk away. Here's the money, good luck, I'm off. Or rather, here's the money, and by the way, I want 5% return in 2 years, or 10% in 2 years, or 20% in 2 years. But that view of finance, which stays for the long haul, where the bringer of finance wants to be part of the project.
Mm-hmm. As finance intrinsically related and measured by value, by the value of something.
Mm.
So if it is a new idea perceived to have great value, it would be financed. If it's perceived to have dubious value, if it's not perceived to be new, do you see all the different?
Mm. Absolutely. We're dealing with deep assumptions here which are wrong and which need breaking. Words that need rescuing. Mm-hmm. You know, we've talked a lot about competition. We don't need to go back into that. Mm-hmm. If only to say that what the vision, where it is wrong at the moment, so what's preventing the change right now, is a view of competition where it has become competition for its own sake. It's the view that says competition is good, full stop.
Yeah.
But where it's detached from any sense of purpose. Another one, I think, is an idea of progress.
Mm.
And this is where technology, we've said, technology in itself is neither good nor bad. The question is, why is it there? What is it harnessed to? What is the vision?
Wow.
What is the vision that the technology serves?
What okay. does it enable?
Yes, yes. So so the philosophical battle going on right now around AI is it going to replace aspects of our humanity?
Is it even designed to replace aspects of
right,
our humanity
right.
in the interests of competitiveness, efficiency?
Exactly. Or are we going to see it as a tool mm-hmm. that can enrich our lives? Fundamental differences at stake here. Yeah.
Here's a question about that. Let's say that you receive an email from someone. You don't realize that it was written by AI, but it was written
sure.
by AI.
Yeah.
You respond to it as if you're responding to the person.
Mm-hmm.
Does that feel violating in any way?
If I found out subsequently,
mm-hmm.
and if it was...
You found out months after, as
yeah.
you've been exchanging messages.
Yeah, I think it would, yes. Yes, it would.
Is that not insanity?
It's. I think you speak to the dangers there, and you rightly use the word violation. There's a violation of trust here, yeah? There's a violation of trust. I felt the distinction this morning, woke up... And there was, I think my partner accidentally pressed a button on the remote control and it triggered a sort of soothing, relaxing music yeah, coming out of the TV. It was really nice. Yeah. It was
and
really
different,
nice.
Different, yeah?
Yeah. And it's a there's a type of soft electronic music that I like and which is designed just to relax you.
To soothe you.
Yeah, soothe you. Now, at that moment I thought, well... I remember thinking, this is, no human has composed this. I don't believe that a human has composed this. It's too simple. It's too familiar. These are packaged products that are probably shared around hotel chains around the world. Mm-hmm. But I said to myself, that's okay. It's okay because I know what it is here. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you recognize that it's not being generated by a human.
Well, yes, exactly, and that's okay. I know where I stand.
It's not masking as a human.
Exactly, I know where I stand. It's okay, and even if it's something that I deeply care about, music, the fact that this particular type of music in this place has probably been made by a machine, it's okay. It's okay.
But that, in that case, Jonathan, it's not speaking to you. You're not having a dialogue with it. If that email were really significant and influenced you, emails primarily are for coordination of action. They're not about a lot of other things. They're misused, but they primarily are about coordination of action. That's what they serve. So if based on that email, that AI had surfaced some sentence or many sentences taken from something meaningful to you and written from there, tangents from there. Again, we spoke about how AI can only draw from what is. So somehow AI masterfully assembled sentences that even part of you recognizes because they're drawn from works you may have long ago read or remembered, and then it seems to be tailored to you enough so that that email was so significant it prompted something in you. Now you go back and discover it was a machine doing that. Mm. How do you feel?
Yeah. Well, you use the word violation. Yeah. Catherine, yeah. There is a violation of trust here. So it goes back to transparency, it goes back to intention. What's the intention here? When I heard this music this morning, I understood the intention. Mm-hmm. The hotel is not saying, look, we have provided you with this beautiful new music. No, it's something on the TV that says you might want to press this button and relax.
Yes, so, give yourself reprieve.
Yeah. So our expectations are lowered. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's not pretending to be Mozart.
Exactly. Right.
Even.
You know there will be some reality show coming on some streaming service
soon. Can you recognize machine or human?
Exactly. Yeah,
sure.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
we've
my
just
God.
Given someone an idea for for a quiz show, I suppose. And you know the Brits love quiz shows, as do many others. But, yeah.
Yep.
Machine. Well, maybe that could be a good thing, Catherine. Raising awareness of the importance of the difference. Mm-hmm. And certainly as communicators, there is a vital difference.
Yeah. We've talked a lot about, we're talking a lot here about assumptions, ideas, thoughts, attitudes that, that prevent change.
Yeah.
I just want to step up to the next level of institutions. So institutions is the, as the expression, the embodiment
of the
ideas and assumptions.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go back into a more micro level now. Just to illustrate the point. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to talk about something quite detailed or real, a real institution, but I think it speaks to the wider vision here that we're articulating and what's in the way of it. There are countries around the world which have stubbornly held on to the idea of two-party politics. And if we want to understand why politics has become war and why that's damaging and almost a denial of what politics can be and should be. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea of working together to find solutions. Yeah. Again, competition, good. Competing values, competing ideas, great. Mm-hmm. Competing ideas of the good society, fantastic, love that. Mm-hmm. But politics as war? No, I'm sorry, this is fundamentally different. And I cannot help but think that the idea of two-party politics, that you have a political framework, a political system where there is let's choose our colours at random here because this is only an example. But let's just imagine that there's a red team and a blue team, yeah? Randomly, there's a red team and a blue team. What does that mean for a society? So the society that I believe in my vision. So not just the, not the society, not only the society that I dream of and aspire to in my vision, but the world that I see today is a world that is complex. Yeah. Each individual is complex. Mm-hmm. We've talked for hours about the complexity of ourselves. Mm-hmm. This is before we even get to the effects of complexity. If there are 60 million of us. Mm-hmm. So if you have one individual human soul who is fractured, divided, complex, given to urges, given to temptations, from birth, inclined to go in this direction, that direction. So if we are utterly, utterly complex as individual human beings. And then on top of that, we have a political community which is 20 million strong, 30 million, 40 million. In Europe, at 30 million, you're still at a medium-sized country.
Yeah.
Yeah, these are not big countries right. When we say 30 million.
Not massive land
no.
areas such as the UK or such as the US or right. Canada or others, but big populations sitting on that ground.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So what are we doing here? We're reminding ourselves that Europe's small countries, mm-hmm. Europe's small and medium-sized mm-hmm. countries mm-hmm. have 20 million people in
Isn't that something?
30 million
we
people.
We have 30 million in Canada across a massive
right.
amount of land.
Feels very different, doesn't it?
Yeah. Look, yes, it looks has. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Totally. Right.
Yeah.
So what are we saying here? If the human complexity of one individual is impossible to put up, we can't put our arms around.
Even one.
Then how can we even begin to do that in a country of 20 million?
And that shared home, has to have the capacity for not only those 30 million, but the others in the European context, those many countries, each of which has a vast number of people.
Right.
How do you share a home?
Right. So if this is who we are as a community, then how can we have a blue team and a red team? As the choice.
As the either or.
For that community. It's absurd. It's just utterly absurd. Yeah. It's mad. Yeah. It's absolutely mad. Mm-hmm. Now, the aspiration, the dream of the vision in part, this is one part of the vision, is to find, you know, this is what we're trying to bring down here. So what's preventing, the question on the card is, what is preventing this change right now? It's an idea and an institution, because that's the problem. It's been institutionalized.
For decades.
Mm-hmm. Into a system of voting, into a way of seeing politics mm-hmm. through its colors, you know, mm-hmm. red, blue. This is preventing change because it denies who we are. So we find ourselves in a political system that denies our complexity. So the whole starting point is wrong. The whole starting point is wrong. Now, I know that the voices, and I'm going to start with the voice of my grandfather, because it's a familiar voice and he's no longer with us, but a lovely voice with its thick, its tick Polish accent through
tick.
It. Tick. Because of his own experience, multi-party politics was full of instability, chaos. And this is what the loud voices, so not my grandfather's voice, but the loud voices of today would say, coalitions, you never get anything done. Right. Chaos.
And there's evidence for that.
Oh, yeah. Chaos. And no, that, again, it's a complete misreading of the thing, the problem. Mm-hmm. Because what happens in the real world, complex, if the charge here, if the charge and the charge sheet is you don't get things done, well, then how do you explain how complex organisations like companies or football teams, you know, how do you explain how complex communities, complex organisations get things done, do beautiful things? How do you explain that? How can we accept all of that and say that, but no, in our political system, we need two colours? Because that leads to, my grandfather said, that leads to strong government. You know, that
too strong?
Well, this idea that, the ultimate perversity, and this is where I'm going into a sort of level of detail that I don't want to get into, but again, it does help. Because it explores what we're getting to. When you have a community with a red team and a blue team and a voting system where you only get a seat in parliament if you win a particular city or borough, then you can have total power in a government with 35-40% of the vote, yeah? The mathematicians will immediately say, but now you're not talking about a two-party system. Now you've got smaller, fragmented. Okay, I accept that. Because if there are only two parties, then it has to be 50-50 or 60-40, like a referendum. Okay, I get that. I'm not denying that. So that in a perfectly two-party system and where every single person voted, where turnout was 100%, yes, you would have to get 50 plus one vote to win. I accept that.
Yeah.
And that would give you a truer majority. Mm-hmm. Okay. But the point I'm making here is that the makeup, the identity of your people, their inner complexity as human beings, their overwhelming pluralism of competing views within themselves and then across society, where the pluralism only expands and expands and expands and expands, and which, by the way, I think is a beautiful, beautiful thing and which needs to be celebrated. If you have a set of institutions, cultural, political, economic, which are in denial of that pluralism and complexity, I think you're in big trouble. So my vision here is seeking to defeat that, to undo it. This is where I want to break something. Because it needs breaking.
It needs breaking.
So yes, it needs to be broken. So this is back to peaceful revolution. You know, we briefly talked about revolution.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
There are times when something cannot be reformed. When it cannot be reformed, it demands revolution.
Yes.
Peaceful revolution.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, people don't need to die here.
No.
But it needs to be violent in the sense of you make that break with the past. Mm-hmm. Today
there
you go. We break with the past because we have to.
Yeah.
We have to.
Yeah.
So this is part of the past that we have to break with.
Wow. Yeah. So can you sum up what is preventing this change right now?
I think if we bring it down to its essence, it's the deep assumptions of not just decades but perhaps centuries, and which paint a view of our shared humanity which is dark and pessimistic and is just not true. Clearly, it's not the only view. I'm saying it's the prevailing view. It's those assumptions that have come to dominate and which have ossified into a truth. And that's when that's when reform becomes impossible. When the assumptions are considered to be true, this is who we are.
Yes.
This is who we are. Mm-hmm. This is our country. Whether you like it or not, it's just who we are. So that the assumptions have become part of the furniture, they've become the foundations, yeah?
Mm. Yeah.
You can't reform that.
No, you can't. But you have to be aware of them. And you've already surfaced a number of assumptions, Jonathan. And I once wrote an article to leaders saying, your assumptions could cost you, because unless you clear those assumptions, and you have to be able to see them, to clear them, they are going to, when you have any dialogue with anyone, you have to share assumptions. As simple as, this to me is a chair. If it's to them a table, you're not going to be right? There's miscommunication right off the start. So being clear on what they are first, what is serving, what is not serving, is really critical. As you spoke, however, a word came up for me. Let's see where it fits in this. Crevice. crevices, and I'm going to define it. Noun, a long, narrow depression in a surface. Synonym, cranny, crack, fissure. A long, narrow opening, crack, cleft, fissure. Origins, 1340, Old French, crevasse, from Latin, to crack or creak, meaning shifted from the sound of breaking to the resulting fissure. How does that fit into this?
It makes me wonder if, because as I hear you say that, it took me to what happens if those cracks are allowed to remain in place and spread. It made me think of anger, actually. It took me to anger and an earthquake eventually. If those cracks are in the ground, they're perhaps the first signs of an earthquake. You wouldn't say they're about a wall or a ceiling. That's a different fracture. But if you look down at the ground, and I was thinking about how if there is a community where there are these cracks and fissures over time, and yet the country's trying to hold together in spite of these, that must create enormous tension. And I wonder if not anger over time. We question ourselves why our countries are angry. Now, my stock answer to that, I think I've alluded a couple of times in our conversations, that I'm not the biggest fan of social media. And I don't mean that facetiously. I think in the space of 10, 15 years, I think social media has done enormous damage to our societies and to our mental health, and to our mental health as well. But the anger that may build up over a longer period, so I'm looking here for something deeper than the recent effects of a technological advance, and I just wonder if a country or a community or a city is held together in spite of deep crevices, the fissures, if that doesn't lead ultimately to an anger over time, or resentment. There's something there.
I have a brief story to relate on a lot of these concepts. When I was 16, I remember going to a park with my father and going for a rollerblading trip. I hate sports.
I was trying to picture you on rollerblades.
This was great. And I had learned how to rollerblade enough that I could manage to propel myself through space. And I remember that I was going very fast because I was angry. Not at the blades, but at life, I was angry. And I came across the root of a tree that cracked the sidewalk. And because I wasn't very good, not that good, at rollerblading, and this was also in a curve, didn't turn out so well. And I ended up falling and bracing my fall with my hand that resulted in a spiral fracture in my wrist. So my arm wasn't dangling off of my body. However, there was a fracture, and I hadn't, the time before that I had broken a bone, I was one, so I didn't really remember what the symptoms were. I just knew something was wrong. And it was a tiny hair fracture, and yet I felt the lightest of breeze on my wrist.
Wow. There was a little space that a breeze could be felt through.
Every interference, every contact I had in that part of my body was excruciating. And imagine the car ride to the hospital. My God, I remembered every pebble. And this brings me to the anger of the people who live in a fractured world where those fractures seep into them.
Visible or invisible.
Invisible, man. Totally invisible. And yet deeply felt. The question here is, or has been, it should not be, but it has been, how high is your pain threshold? How well can you compose yourself amidst incredible inner turmoil and pain as the fissures and the fractures get bigger? Mm-hmm. That's not functional.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to add a piece before I see you about to leave.
Yeah.
You spoke about the institutions diminishing. I think your word, you actually used the word dark, darkened our humanity. So if you then look at that definition of crevice as a long, narrow depression in a surface, if the surface were collective humanity, darkened depression, long, what do you see?
It's the abyss.
Just the abyss. Holy Hannah. The abyss. Mm. Yeah. Are we on the edge?
Well, we are now today. I don't think that's an exaggeration at all. I don't think we're...
What do you see, Jonathan, when you say that?
Just what's at stake, I think. Just what's at stake.
And what's at stake?
Everything at the moment. Everything. Let's at this stage, let's not go back into the wars.
Yeah. No.
But that's where
everything's at stake.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate on a word you use a lot for the benefit of others to make sure we share?
Yep.
Because I actually looked it up in the dictionary and it's completely inadequate. The word is humanity.
Mm. Yes. It is inadequate. It's perhaps because it's overused. And we talk about our shared humanity. Clearly it's not wrong. I mean, that's not, but I see where you're trying to go with this. It's
the quality of being humane, the quality of being human, humanness, manhood, of all of the living human inhabitants of the earth, that's considered to be humanity.
Yes. I feel why it's weak and inadequate. It reminds me a little bit of that other international community, which has become empty.
Baseless.
As an idea, baseless. Yeah. It's lost its, I don't know if it ever had really any strength, but, you know, international community.
What do you see when you see that? I don't see faces of people, do you?
No, and it's the language of day-to-day reporting and political conversation. It's very tired.
Mm-hmm.
It's very tired.
You have a long list of words to rescue.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
because that in itself may be a full-time job.
That's right, because community, as you know, I keep coming back to the word community, is something wonderful and beautiful, and international in itself can be a glorious.
Because it spans word. Across.
Yes.
Yeah, and but, embraces. But
international community is a great example of two good words coming together and creating emptiness.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just go back to a second here for a second. Your little story there, Catherine, your fracture also was caused by a fracture in the earth.
Yes.
You know, the roots
Beautiful.
Of the tree.
Yeah.
So I had this image of the roots of the tree saying, enough. I can't take this anymore. I'm going to break through the earth here. I'm going to rise up.
You know, 11.
I know I'm a root. I know I'm supposed to go down, but boy, enough.
Because I'm a rebel.
Yeah. Yes. And I'm going to rise up and break through this concrete, this ground. Okay.
Maybe so because there's no other place it can go.
Exactly. That's what we said. Your anger, love and care that has nowhere to go.
And wants to be seen.
Yes.
Break through the earth, not continue to burl downwards.
Exactly. So when that is being denied in the roots of a tree, but in our society, we're back to the idea of truth again, because there is denial here. The roots of that tree were denied. They'd run out of space. They didn't have space to go to. Voices in a community which are denied and become angry at some stage. So an age of anger which was there before social media, and where this social media amplified
anger. Yes. Yeah?
But where the those fractures, the crevices were already there. So if we come back to our shared home that we build together anew in this vision, this is what is preventing the change now. It's our inability to tell the truth to ourselves. A community which has lost the ability or the will or the courage to tell the true story of itself. You know, we're back to the hunger of our children. And that film, the scene in the film, where the mother walks into a food bank and is compelled by her own famine to open a tin of food and feed herself with her own hand, yeah? Because at that moment, we felt the, not her loss of dignity, but her country's loss of dignity. What that moment illustrates is that the country, the home, has lost its dignity. Mm-hmm. And where does that come from? Because the country has lost its ability to tell a true story about itself.
Hmm? I think you've summed it up brilliantly. Thank you. Jonathan has a big vision of what could be that shared home on new ground. He sees now that we have to break with the past in order to realize it. And that means defeating, undoing, those institutions that deny who we are. He sees that there is pluralism within every individual, and that we are complex as our communities and countries. We therefore need institutions that reflect that. He also speaks of anger that pre-existed social media, but that's been amplified by it, and sees that our own voices and those of our communities have been denied. As well, he sees that we've lost the will, the courage, the ability to tell ourselves a true story. But he insists that we don't have to resign ourselves to the fractures within us. There's too much at stake. We must tell ourselves the truth so we can build a shared home together on new ground. The leader's journey continues. Stay tuned. If listening to this Illumify Game Changer podcast is of value to you, please like it on this platform and share it with those who could ignite meaningful change. It's here, as am I, to be of service. I'm Marianne Gobet. Thank you for accompanying us on the leader's journey. To fully experience the passage to igniting meaningful change, subscribe to the Illumify Game Changer podcast. To learn more about the Illumify Game Changer and how to embark on your own leader's journey, please visit Illumify's website at illumifyinstitute.com. You matter. Step up. Speak up. Together, let's ignite meaningful change. Thank you.